So once again, we were talking about Yosef, and the larger issue of Yosef meeting up with the brothers and Yosef's plan is something which, over the years, we have discussed in more detail. There's one more specific point that I want to get to, which is really, it's one of, shall we call it a subplot, which is within the larger story which is taking place, very easy to miss, but I believe that what Yosef is doing to a certain extent is that he performs wonderful ventriloquism. What I mean by that is that he gets the brothers to say, he gets them to do and to say what he wants them to say, but in order to understand this, we still need to see what he's doing. Now, of course, there's a larger plan which Yosef is involved with, and that larger plan is something which is somewhat debatable, and I don't want to get into all the details about that right now. But I think there's an advantage in not hearing it, because that way you can make up what you think I said. People whose hearing aids are on low tend to enjoy it much more. Yosef is somebody who sees the future. The reason I say he sees the future is because Yosef understands dreams. The fact that Yosef is going to meet up with the brothers at some point in the future, and when it finally happens, is 22 years after he first perhaps has the dream or tells about the dream, which means he has a dream when he's 17 years old. He's 39 now, and he meets up with the brothers. So in my mind, there's no question that this is not for Yosef. Oh, what a coincidence. My brothers happened to come today. I mean, I'd say further than that. For the day that Paro had his dreams, and Yosef went and interpreted them, and Yosef understood that there's going to be the 7 good years, the 7 bad years, there's going to be a famine, there's going to be a famine in the whole general area. Yosef gives a 14-year economic plan. I mean, we can use a 5-year plan here. I mean, this is a 14-year...
We're working on
2. On a 2-year economic plan. We have a hard time passing the budget here in any given year. But a 14-year economic plan, which absolutely, without any question, not only saves the lives of the Egyptians, but it ends up making Paro a very wealthy man, although it's possible that Paro got all the credit and Yosef got all the blame, because there could be a great deal of anti-Semitism that comes because of what Yosef did, eventually turning all the Egyptians into economic slaves. From the day that Yosef realized about this next 14 years, I can't see that he did not know that there would be an eventuality of his brothers coming and looking for food. Which means, again, I can't believe that that took him by surprise, and therefore, I want to go one step further. Therefore, the words that he uses, I don't think is sudden emotion. I don't think that Yosef is suddenly overtaken by emotion, and therefore the words just sort of blurt out. And again, the main issue then is that can we analyze these words or can we not analyze these words? So my point is, I think he's been thinking about it for a long time. I think this question exactly, you know, next week, how he reveals himself, I am Yosef, and what exactly he says, that's not something which just, you know, came upon him. So Yosef, among all the other things, and I do have to point out that there is at least one tragedy. There's a whole series of tragedies, and it's tragedies woven into deeper tragedies. But when Yosef meets the brothers, there's one thing that he doesn't know. He knows they're going to come. But what he doesn't know is, will they recognize him or not recognize him? Because that's really up to them and not up to him. And the question then comes, is there a psychological block which will prevent them from seeing him? Because again, you see somebody sometimes out of context, and then it's a little difficult to make that connection. So how out of context is it to see Yosef here? Now, when I say here, that's a little more complicated. When I say how complicated is it to see Yosef in Egypt, well, last they saw him, he was headed down with Yishmaelites, headed down towards Egypt. Which means there should have at least been a suspicion that Yosef is in Egypt. That's the last time that they knew of him. And then you would have to wonder, are they looking around? Are they trying to find him or not? There's a woman who cuts my wife's hair. You can't see because... Okay. There's a woman who cuts my wife's hair. Her name is Tommy. She comes very highly recommended. And Tommy is a Yemenite woman. So I don't know how much you know about the missing Yemenite children. There's four. You can do that. I don't know how much you know about the story about the Yemenite children, but according to the Yemenite narrative, there were thousands upon thousands of children that went missing in the early years of the state and pre-state, once the whole group came over. The rumor that spread about was that Ashkenazi Holocaust survivors who didn't have children or lost their children went and took these children. So now, how widespread this was, I cannot say. There's no question in my mind that there were some instances that this really happened. Whether this accounts for every single missing child or not is a larger question. But going back to Tommy, Tommy had a sister who went missing. So the authority said that these children died. That's what they were told, the children died. Every time Tommy goes out to a mall, she looks at all the faces. She looks in the street, a mall. She looks at all the faces to see, is her missing sister someplace there? And one of her siblings actually said, we saw our sister. It couldn't have been anybody else. But of course, you know, as you said, the mind plays tricks and who knows. But are the brothers walking around Egypt looking for their missing brother? Which means, when they sold Yosef, did they turn their back on him? And the turning of the back meant, that's it. He's just, you know, when the brothers actually speak to Yosef, do you know what the most interesting thing for him would have been? There's actually, I would say, there's probably 3 points in their words which are interesting. One, and I'm not going in the order of significance necessarily. One is, what happened to his younger full brother, Binyamin? Did they do the same thing to him that they did to him? Another question would be, is his father still alive? And the third question would be, so what exactly do you tell the family about this missing sibling? Which means, where is Yosef? So when they answer, they say, you know, we're 12 sons of one man and so on. The youngest is with his father. So therefore, again, they don't know it's Yosef. They're saying the youngest is with his father. So that moment they hear that Binyamin has preferential treatment. Binyamin, nonetheless, is still alive. His father is still alive. But what else they hear is, when it gets to Yosef, what do they say? Ve'achad einenu. Einenu. He's no longer with us. Einenu. So that's something which, again, is a fascinating point, but I want to go back 2 steps before then. When Yosef meets his brothers, he does not know, will they recognize him or not? And I would like to, again, I don't want to say I'd like to believe or not like to believe. I would assume that Yosef does not know what's going to happen right then. That one possibility is they look him in the eye and they say, now you get to write the script. They say, yeah, what do they say?
Something is...
If they realize it's him, again, they bow down, they stand up, they look him in the eye, Charlotte, help me, and they say... Why are you so shy today?
They say.
We always wonder what happened to you.
That's it. We always wonder what happened to you. No, that's no good. That's no good. You can do much better than that. You look familiar. You know, what school did he go to as a kid? You know, where did you grow up? You know, maybe we know.
OMG.
Okay, good. Oh my God, but she's very sophisticated. So, oh, she said, OMG. Oh my God. Now that's interesting. That's interesting because that's exactly what I want to get to today, the way that I would write their speech for them. But again, when you're under pressure, sometimes other things come out. I would say that they would immediately realize that they are in very, very severe trouble right now. Because Yosef is standing there with all of his guards and with all of his army there, and they're standing there, and you know, you just look at the military, the political consequences of what has happened 22 years ago, and again, they realize that this is really, really bad. This is not a good situation. And the only thing that I think they can do is a combination of two. One is to say, not just to say, they need to convey that they are really, really sorry. By the way, saying they're sorry needs another element to it. It's not enough to say you're sorry. The other element has to be... No. They already bowed. The other element needs to be... We were wrong, not just for selling you. We were wrong. We underestimated you. We never believed it was possible for you to become this person that you always believed that you were going to be. And the ace that they have is, our father needs food. Please, for the sake of our father, let's just... Yeah, and let us bring food to our father. Let us take care of our father. But we wronged you. We're sorry. We know there's nothing we do to make it up. But again, it has to be a very, very... But of course, all that's ruined. All that's ruined. Do you realize for Yosef what a bummer this is? One second. Do you realize how bad this is for Yosef? The brothers bowed down. The brothers bowed down, and he didn't get to enjoy the moment. Because they bowed.
I didn't know.
They didn't know it's him. So the idea of them bowing down. Yes, it came true. Yes, it came true. The brothers bowed down to him. Exactly. So Yosef's dream, you're going to bow down to me, does come true. But don't you realize that there's something hollow about it? Which leads me back. So they need a therapist. Okay. Yosef has dreamed that his brothers will bow down to him. The dream comes true. The only problem is that the other side who bowed down to him have no idea that it's Yosef. So now, does Yosef get to... I don't want to even use the word enjoy the moment, because enjoy is probably... There's something which is missing. There's something which is missing, because as you correctly said, they're bowing down to Yosef because that is Yosef, but they have no idea they're bowing down to Yosef. So again, something is lacking. Now, one of the amazing things to me throughout this entire story is the fact that the brothers never recognize him throughout this whole thing. And it really, as we move on, it gets quite strange. And I'm going to focus on one of the points as we move on, but it gets quite strange because he's asking them about the family, he's asking about the father, he's asking about the brother. There is this concern which seems to be a little bit out of context. And no matter what happens, and he is maltreating them, and he's setting them up, and he's putting them in, and he's really putting them through the ringer. And nonetheless, it never really gets to this point that it's Yosef. That's the only thing which makes sense in this whole story, is that it's Yosef, and they can't do it. Now it goes back to the question: is why they can't believe it. Now, one reason would be is because apparently they absolutely underestimated him. They underestimated him from the beginning to end. They never imagined that Yosef could be this person. Maybe I'll speak about this more next week, but I'll tell you now. We'll cheat a little bit. There is a wonderful midrash that when Yosef does reveal himself, he says, "You know, this Yosef who you said is dead, he's still alive." And they said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "I have him." And they said, "Where?" He goes, "He's in the room." They start looking around. Which means even after Yosef says Yosef is in the room, and they're looking around, and they say, where is he? That they still can't understand that it's Yosef. So that midrash, I think, is fascinating about again this total disconnect, the impossibility of Yosef being this person who's picking on them. Which again, I'm going to say, is the only logical explanation for all the things which are taking place here. That in fact it's Yosef. Yeah. Well, the first dream.
Yeah.
Right. The first dream. Right, but the first dream came true. Right, but that's the second dream. The first dream came true. Okay. So, let's try again. One of the reasons that the brothers can't believe it, because he knew the famine was coming. He knew there was a famine. He knew that there was no food. So he knew that he had all the food. So of course they're coming. Okay. So now, one of the issues is that the brothers underestimated him. And let's go back to the brother's mind. They're traveling down to Egypt. It's been a long time. Yosef went there 22 years ago. So what's the first thought in your mind if you do think about Yosef? Which, by the way, I do think is a reasonable thought to have. Oh, we happen to be going to the place that we sold a brother as a slave. So I think that is a thought first thought that goes is he's probably not even alive anymore. I mean, how long can somebody survive as a slave in that type of a society? Well, maybe. That's a question which a number of the Rishonim play with. But, for example, the Ramban is the one who made that question famous, and he said it's not a question, which means he doesn't even ask it as a question, but he just uses it in order to explain a much larger issue. But that even that would be presuming something on the brother's part, and that is that Yosef as a slave ever had that the wherewithal, ever had the ability to do that, which means they never had the reason to believe that Yosef, meaning, I think it's the quite opposite. Let's think about it for a second. What do we know about Yosef in terms of his work versus the brothers? The brothers worked. The brothers were shepherds. What did Yosef do? He told on them. Which means, what does Yosef do? He tells on them. Which means, does Yosef actually know how to roll up his sleeves and do work? Which means Yosef being sold off on a slave, they probably think that he's worthless. They probably think that he's never going to even make it as a slave. Even as a slave, he's no good for this. They probably thought that he would not last very long. Now, there's a second topic which the Midrash does pick up on. And when Yosef accuses them of being spies, he says, Erva ta'aretz. Right? You came to look. Now, the term Erva ta'aretz, some of the commentaries tell us, means that you came to look for the weak part of the land because you were spies and you wanted to attack the land, so you did you're doing a military analysis. But there is at least one Midrash that explains it differently. It doesn't use the word Erva ta'aretz, but listen to what it says, and then you'll see how it understands it differently. It says that Yosef gave the passport control people information saying, write down all the names of all the people coming in. And if anyone, the son of Yaakov, comes in, let me know. He gets a report that 10 sons come in through 10 different gates. The reports come to him, and he says, okay, close all the granaries, the place that's except for one, and that one place, you know, take the names, and if they come there, then let me know. Days go by, they don't show up to buy food. Now, the reason they went there is to buy food, so they're not there. So Yosef then sends out 70 soldiers to go looking for, Yosef sent out 70 soldiers looking for his brothers, and they got looking all parts of the city, and where do they find them? They find them in the red light district. That's... I'll explain to you what the red light district is later. What? The major says that they find the brothers in this place. It says of Zonot. It goes this area of the Zonot. Now I couldn't explain why any of the brothers, except for Yehuda maybe. Why any of the brothers would. So what are the brothers doing there? So they say what they're doing there. They say that Yosef, again, so they say Yosef was good for nothing, but he was a good-looking guy. He's probably working as a male prostitute. All this is in the Midrash. No. They're going there looking for Yosef, and they say, "Let's go find him and bring him back." Now, I think on the Midrashes, I am telling you, this is what the Midrash says. I apologize if you've never heard it before. For all your teachers, you may have had. Now. Let me. Do you understand why they didn't teach this to you in elementary school? Okay. So again, the Midrash. It's in Midrash Rabbah, Bereishit Rabbah. So, the Midrash have over here has a little bit of a fantasy. The fantasy is the brothers are really looking for him. The brothers, but what else is the Midrash saying? They've completely underestimated him, which means to look for Yosef in the red light district, that's where we can find Yosef. To look for Yosef in the palace and staring at him face to face, Yosef couldn't be there, which also means another thing. Yosef, as far as they're concerned, never could have survived. Forget about surviving physically. Could he be alive? Yosef, after all these years in Egyptian, in a corrupt Egyptian society, 22 years later, Yosef would be a corrupt Egyptian because he was never worth anything anyway, which means where would he be? He would have sunk to the very bottom of the social strata within Egypt, which of course is a little bit unfair because that's where they sold him to, but again, that's where they can find Yosef. Yosef could never have survived. It's not possible. And that's what I want to go back to, because when Yosef, and that's why this Midrash is so interesting. And I'll say it again. I believe the Midrash is going on the term et erva ta'aretz batim, right? You came to the erva ta'aretz, not meaning the weak part of the country. You went to the red light district. And you've been looking for something or someone there. And the brothers deny it, which means the brothers don't know about the Midrash. Or they feel that they cannot admit it. But either way, meaning if they really did look for him, and Yosef is convinced, again, Yosef is convinced they don't look for him, they don't care about him, they can't even see him, which is why his victory was a hollow victory. Now, what don't the brothers know? They don't know what happened when Yosef first got to Egypt. When he first got there, so again, one thing which is a constant in the Yosef biography, he constantly rises to the top. Every place he goes, he rises to the top. The brothers never see that. That for them, again, is not really possible. Second thing that happens, Yosef is approached in order to barter his sexuality for favors, right? For status, where again, Yosef is asked to be, again, I don't know what would you call it? Yosef is asked to prostitute himself in order to have personal gain. Is there a better way of putting it? Which means, and what happens? Okay, you know the story, right? Right? Mrs. Potiphar comes and like day after day, and Yosef says, Mrs. Potiphar, are you trying to seduce me? Okay. Okay. Played by Dustin Hoffman, right? So if we go back now to source number one, here's what the brothers never could understand about Yosef, and they never saw it. The Yosef who rad Mitzrayma, viknu Potiphar suris paro sarat habachim ish Mitzri biyadi Yishmaelim asher rudu shama. Yosef was bought so and so and so forth. Sarat habachim, again in elementary school we call sarat habachim. He is the chief cook. Sarat habachim may very well have been the chief executioner. The chief, which the Targum Onkelos goes in that direction. Chief executioner, by the way, makes it a little bit scarier than starting up with the main cook. I know, because I know that we have the wine steward and we have the baker and the candlestick maker and everybody else. So now we have the Sarat Habachim. Sarat Habachim may very well have been the chief executioner. So now, when the chief executioner's wife hits on you, stay away. He's got sharp knives. Either way, he's got sharp knives, by the way. That's either way. So, Pasuk Bet, and this is also something the brothers never ever see or recognize. Vayihi Hashem et Yosef, vayihi ish matzliach. God is always with Yosef. You know, Yosef, I'm going to back up what I'm about to say. Yosef is the most religious person in Bereshit. Yosef is the most religious person. He's the person who is most involved with God in terms of what he says, and God is most involved with him. You know, when we look at the beginning of Noach, and Noach says, Noach ish tzaddik, right? Elokim etalech Noach. It basically begins and ends, we don't even know what made Noach great. Yosef is the only other person who may be referred to as a tzaddik. No one else in Bereishit is referred to as a tzaddik. No one else in Chumash is referred to as a tzaddik. If we trust last week's Haftorah, b'michram, right? Well, you sold a tzaddik, bavor na'alayim, the selling of, again, if that nevuah is talking about Yosef, then Yosef is called a tzaddik as well. Whether we want to call him a tzaddik or not, I don't know. But there's nobody else that it uses a phrase like this, and God is with him, right? V'yihi Hashem et Yosef. Vayar Adonav ki Hashem ito. And the people around him see that God is with him. V'kol asher oseh Hashem matzliach biyado. And everything that he does, he succeeds. Which means, here we have, it's not just a God consciousness, which he does have. What we have is that God has a Yosef consciousness, which, by the way, is far more impressive. Remember years and years ago, you know, students have a very easy way of getting a rabbi's attention. You come over and say, Rabbi, I don't know if I believe in God. So that's like a guarantee. So there was one guy that used to do this to me all the time. So finally I said to him, I don't care. and then I said, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking if you believe in God, he does exist. If you don't believe in God, he doesn't exist. I said, that's irrelevant because God exists whether you believe in him or not. But what's far more important than if you believe in God, the question is, does God believe in you? Because if God doesn't believe in you, then you're not going to exist. Over here, no, God is with Yosef. Meaning, that's what's really impressive. And people see it. People see it. Let's continue over here. Pasuk Hey, v'yihimi azif kirotobe beitov, al kol asher yeshlo vayivarech Hashem. I didn't bold that one. I should have. God blessed the Beit HaMitzri biglal Yosef. Vayibrakat Hashem b'chol asher yeshlo b'bayit v'sadeh. That he is incredibly successful and it radiates. Yosef's God being with himness radiates and it affects, it impacts everything. And people see it. Which, by the way, may be one of the reasons that this Sar HaTabachim is afraid to do anything to him. Which means, the question is, why didn't he kill him? So the normative answer is, which we get from Rashi, is that he didn't believe his wife. He did this and this and this, and he doesn't believe this. He doesn't believe his wife. But it's not just he doesn't believe his wife. It could be he's absolutely terrified of doing anything to Yosef. Why? Because of everything it says here. Because he sees. He sees that his whole bank account is increasing because of Yosef. Everything is successful because of Yosef. Continue. Ve'yazov kol shelo biyad Yosef. That's a no-brainer. Everything Yosef touches turns to gold. So what would you do? Let him touch more and more things. Right? You notice only the women said that. V'lo yada itom uma ki halechem asher hu ochel v'yosef yifei torah v'yifei mareh. Oh, and just by the way, and this is like the hardest thing, he happened to be very, very good looking also. V'yechadur me'ilu v'tisa eshet adonav et dineh el Yosef. She casts her licentious glance upon him. V'tomer shichva imi. And by the way, notice, this is not an offer. It's an order. But Tomer, she said, she gives him a direct order. Shechva imi, sleep with me. V'yima'ein. Now people pick on Yosef because of this v'yima'ein. And over here we have a shalshelet, and the way that the shalshelet is done, v'yima'ein, right? Which indicates perhaps some type of a hesitation on his part. V'yima'ein. And I do want to mention something else, but you're right about not getting to the last page. Half an hour, we're halfway through the first source. That I do want to point something out, is that a number of the commentaries, and the number of the Midrashim, pick on Yosef, that he was thinking of it, he wanted to, whatever. Yosef refuses. V'yomer el eshet Adonav, hein Adoni lo yada iti ma babayit, v'kol sheyesh lo natan biyadi. First of all, he's saying there's a moral issue. Your husband trusts me. Okay, this is a moral issue. He trusts me. Einei gadol babayit hazeh mimeni, v'lo chasach mimeni mu'uma, ki im otach. There's nothing that he's withheld from me except of you. V'asher at ishto, because you are his wife. Like a little musar. And how can I do something which is unethical, immoral, to my boss? And this would be a sin against God. Yosef is bringing God into this discussion, which means over here, this is what the brothers absolutely do not believe is possible, that Yosef would have the moral fortitude to go into Egypt as Yosef HaTzadik, and all those years later, still be Yosef HaTzadik. So this point that I fear God, he actually says to the brothers. They don't get it. They don't understand it. But he does absolutely say it. If you take a look after he arrests them, if we just skip to source 13 and 14, when Yosef is describing the dreams, he says to the Sar Hamashkim, Halo lelokim pitronam, God is the one who interprets dreams. When he talks to Paro, he says, Elokim yanet shlom Paro, God will give the interpretation. Et asher elokim oseh higid leParo, what God is doing, he's told to Paro. Asher elokim oseh higid leParo, he says it again, Me'im elokim u'maher elokim lasoto. He keeps talking about God. V'yom Paro l'adav, ha'nimtza kezeh ish asher ruach elokim bo? Is there anybody that we've ever seen who has the Spirit of God with him? Which means Yosef is talking to a self-defied deity. Paro sees himself as the god of the Nile, and he's talking about God. Which means, first of all, this is an unbelievable statement that Yosef has, but not only is it unbelievable, Paro internalizes, which means this is a mirror of the first scene. Just like Potiphar sees within Yosef this blessing of God is with him, they absolutely see it again. And as I said, this happens, look at in the first source, Pasuk Kaf, V'yikach Adonai Yosef, Otov, ve'nei el beit ha-sohar, makom asher asirei ha-melech asirim. That also should give you a hint. Which prison does he put him into? The political. Why? Because Yosef is dangerous. Why is Yosef dangerous? Because Yosef, when he's blessed, God is with him, he can bring down the whole economy as well if we mistreat him. Again, I don't know if you ever noticed this. Yosef is put with the political prisoners because he is a dangerous person, and that's why he's very careful with what he's going to do with him. But what does it say when he gets there? Vayishem et Yosef, vayeti lav chasid, vayitin chino b'neisar beit ha-sohar. Yosef, again, God is with him. Ein sar beit ha-sohar et kol mumah b'yado, v'asher Hashem ito. V'asher hu oseh Hashem matzliach. Again, an exact echo of what happened when he gets to Potiphar's house. He gets to prison. God is with Yosef in everything he does. And Paro sees it. Potiphar sees it, the warden sees it, everybody sees it, and Yosef talks about it. He's not afraid to say it. Now, I was going to spend a little bit of time, we're going to have to push this off for another year, I was going to spend a little bit of time about how some of the Midrashim attack Yosef. We'll talk more on Shabbat about it. Not for now, but let's continue to what happens when Yosef does meet up with his brothers, which is on page number 3. Yosef sees his brothers, he meets his brothers, and he puts them in prison. A little midah keneged midah. It may actually be even sharper than that, because when Yosef says to the Sar HaMashkim that, please tell Paro about me, why? Ki samu oti babor. They put me in the bor. So there's a difference of opinion if the bor means back, my brothers put me in, which is irrelevant. Who cares? Your brothers put you in a bor. Or he's talking about the prison. The Egyptian prison is they put me in the pit. Right? And that's the way they refer to the... So Yosef does the same thing to his brothers and he puts them in a prison in order to help jar their memory that maybe once upon a time they had a brother as well. Just the next two steps in this, when the brothers get out, first he says, all of them should stay and one should go. And then he flips it on them. No, one will stay and the others go. So when was the last time that all the brothers left, they left one brother behind? Last time they did it, when they left and left one of them behind, they never thought about him again. But now Yosef is making them replay that scene. And just to make it a little bit better, the most cynical move in this whole thing is one which is so easy to miss, and that's when Yosef puts the money in their bags. Because when they left their brother behind, they traded him for money. So basically Yosef is saying, so what do you prefer? You want your brother or you want the money? You want to keep the money? So keep the money. Don't come back. Leave your brother behind. Which means it is such a cynical... That's very good, right? Right? That's very good what I just now said. It's such a cynical statement. I said, I've never seen any of the commentaries look at it this way, because they look at it generally within the much, much, much larger plan. But I think that's what Yosef is doing. Leave one brother behind. Go ahead. Didn't we see this movie before? Money in the bag, but no brother. Didn't we see this before? So Yosef is trying to jar them. But listen to what he says when we get to, again, source number 15. V'yasof otam el mishbar shloshet yamim. Yosef puts them in prison under guard for 3 days. V'yomer leim Yosef b'yom ha-shlishi. Zot asu v'chayu. Et elokim ani. Yorei, I fear God. Now, if you're the brothers of Yosef, and first of all, you think that monotheism is a family business, and you guys have the monopoly on this, what in the world is this person talking about having Yirat Elokim? Remember when Avraham meets up with, Avimelech?
It's, Egyptians did have...
Right, one second. When Avraham meets up with Avimelech, and he goes the whole "it's my sister, my wife" thing. Avimelech says, "What were you thinking? What were you thinking that I almost slept with a married woman?" Because Avimelech was very, very moral, and he would never sleep with a married woman. If he found a married woman, he'd kill the husband because he's moral. And then she wouldn't be married anymore. I mean, there are ways of solving all kinds of problems. So he says, "What were you thinking? Mara'ita ki asita davar hazeh." What in the world were you thinking that you did this? What does Avram say? There's no morality in this place. Which means, that's what they understand.
There's no morality.
There's no objective.
Relative.
Right, there's no objective morality in this place. There's no objective. There's no morality based upon God. There's no fear. Right. There's no fear of God. And here, from the depths of this morally, this moral abyss, which is Egypt, comes a voice out saying, "I fear God." Which means this should have thrown the brothers for the biggest loop in the world. What do you mean you fear God? You know, we're the ones who fear God. But you know what's interesting? Yosef talks of God, but the brothers don't. And listen to the brother's response, because you'd have to ask yourself, so what's missing? So listen to what he continues in Yud-Tet. Im kinim atem, achichem achad yaser, bebeit mishmarchem. Leave one brother behind, like I said before. Vatem lechu yiviu shever avon betechem. And you go bring the food to your father already. Right? Remember dad, he's waiting for your food? Ve'et achichem akaton taviu elai, v'yamnu devreichem v'lo tamutu v'yasuchem. Bring your younger brother here, and then you're going to live and you won't die. This is a little ominous. He just said he fears God right before then. And Kaf Aleph, he evokes a response from them. Vayomur ish elachiv. And one says to the other, possibly even Shimon to Levi, because they were presumably the main protagonists, as Rashi points out here. Aval ashemim anachnu. We are guilty. Ashemim anachnu. Okay, so then it couldn't have been Shimon. Rashi says Shimon. Aval ashemim anachnu. Yeah, he takes them all out, and then he puts one back right after this. Aval ashemim anachnu, al achinu asher ra'inu tzarat nafsho, our brother, we saw the pain of his soul. Vitchanenu aleinu, when he begged us, he pleaded with us, v'lo shamanu, and we were deaf to his call. Al kein ba ineinu atzara hazot. That's why this has all happened to us. So Yes. Yosef hears this. So why isn't this enough? What's missing over here? Here we have the brothers finally saying, no, we really messed up. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. God is not here. God is in Yosef's words, and God is not in the brothers' words. And that, to me, is very striking. There's another thing which is missing here as well. All that they're saying here is that this is karma. This is karma. There's no mention of God. There's also no mention of their father, which means their sin was a little bit more complex. They sinned against their brother, but they also sinned against their father, and they also sinned against God. All they're saying over here is, oh, this bad stuff is happening to us because of what we did to our brother. So what goes around comes around, but as I said, I think at least two elements are missing. My point is, again, if they would have said something else, let's go all the way. I know, but Yosef, the next pasuk says Yosef is listening. Yosef hears this. Yosef hears, so I'm going to go back to the beginning. When the brothers bow down, if they stand up and they see it's Yosef, they say, oh my God, it's Yosef, we're sorry, we can't. So Yosef admits it's Yosef, which means Yosef has various stages along the way in the story that he can say, okay, I'm Yosef. So over here is the first really good time for him to say it. So again, I'm asking what's missing. So I'm saying the fact that Yosef speaks of God, but the brothers don't speak of God, to me it jumps out. But I want you to see the larger...
You're saying to miss the opportunity?
Yes. No. The brothers didn't go far enough. But Yomi Yehuda El Yisrael Aviv... Shilcha hanar iti v'nakumu v'nelcha v'nichye v'lo namut gam anachnu gam ata gam tapenu. They ran out of food. They need to go back. They need to bring Binyamin. Yaakov says, no way. And then he says, Anochi ravnu mi de mi yadi tivakshenu im lo v'yati v'lecha v'hitzakti l'fnecha v'chatati l'cha kol yamim. Right? If I don't bring him back, I would have sinned against you. When he finally convinces Yaakov to let him go, Yaakov says, "V'kel shakai yiten lecha rachamim l'fnei ish, v'shilach lechem etachichem acher v'epinimim." Yudalid 14. Yaakov says, "May God be with you," which means again, Yosef has a God consciousness. God has a Yosef consciousness, but within the brothers, where is it that God speaks? Now, the brothers have a problem because they have a problem because they're dealing with somebody who's very, very capable, and they have no idea what they're up against. They have a problem because the person who they're up against actually has a lot of reason to be angry with them and reason to take vengeance against them. They have no idea what's going on. Going again, now one step further, they have another problem. One, Shimon's in prison. to Binyamin. Okay, they have to, A, make sure Binyamin comes home. B, they have to somehow get Shimon out. C, they have another problem, and that's the problem of the money in their bags. How do we go back and explain, oh, by the way, remember we paid for the food, but we, you know, it all came back to us. That's not an easy conversation to have, especially when you've been accused of treachery along the way. So,
and
they have to get more food. So they have a long list of, their mission is not as easy as they perhaps thought the first time they made the trip. So now, look what happens now when they do come back. Pasuk Yudtet, further in the same source. Vayikshu el ha'isha shel beit Yosef. They go to Yosef's man, and we'll come more to this man as we continue. Vayedebru elav petach habayit. Vayomu bi'adoni. You're right with Tchilash Bar Ochel. Listen, we have a little thing that we need to take care of. We came in a while ago to get some food. V'yikivanu elam alon v'niftecha etam tachtenu. And we opened up our bags. V'nei kesef ish mipi amtachto kaspein v'mishkolo v'nashiv oto b'yadenu. By the way, they're not completely truthful, which we talked about last year as well. They're not completely truthful. When it happened, only one of them opened their bag. There is a midrash that says it was Reuven, by the way. Only one of them opened their bag and found the money inside. And then after they got home, the rest of them opened their bag and saw the money. They don't want to get too complicated. They say, we opened our bag, we found all of our money there, and there must have been some kind of a mistake over here. So, as I said, that's not an easy conversation. Right? Kof bet. V'kesef acher haradnu b'yadenu l'shbor ochel lo yodanu misam kaspeinu v'am tochtenu. We have no idea how the money got up and ended back in our bags, but we brought the money back, we want to give it back to you, and so on. Kof gimel. V'yomer shalom lachem al tirav, don't be afraid. Elokeichem v'lokei avichem natan lachem matmon v'am tochtechem kaspechem bo'elai. He says there was a miracle. The money, I got paid. The money's here with us. Your God and the God of your father must have done a miracle for you. So again, you have Yosef speaking of God. You have Yosef's soldiers or some speaking about God. And again, if you ask me, there's no question that Yosef prepared them for this and said, this is exactly what you need to say. But you still don't have the brothers speaking about God. Continue. Yosef, right away, I fear God. There's a chance of them all being punished? No, I fear God and I wouldn't do this because this isn't just. There's a problem with the money? Miracle happened. God took care of you. All of this is a setup for what happens next. And this is in source 17. V'yitzavet asher al beito lemor maleit amtachot anashim ochel kasher yuchlun se'et v'sim kesef ish pi amtachto. Go and put the money back. Each person gets their money back, which, by the way, never comes up again in the conversations later on. They all get their money back again. And put this cup inside the bag of the youngest one. Haboker, or the day breaks, and they're sent along the way. They leave the city. Lo hichiku v'Yosef amar La'asher al beito, so that's again our same guy. Kum redof acharaya anashim v'hisagtim v'marter lehim. And now again, Yosef is telling them exactly what to say. Lama shilamtim ratacha tova. Why did you repay all the good we've done for you with bad? Which, by the way, is very interesting. What does that remind you of? Who said I cannot repay? That's Yosef with Eshet Potiphar. It would be immoral for me, after all the good that your husband has done for me to do bad. Which is this idea of hakarat hatov, this idea that you cannot act indecently, with a lack of decency. That is something which Yosef has lived. This is Yosef. Which means when Yosef says that, et elokim yirei, I fear God, that's true. That's not just a speech he's giving. Meaning, this is part of the disconnect. You thought Yosef was lost all those years ago. You think at best Yosef is working as a male prostitute. Yosef says, no, I'm not for sale for money. I was put in that situation, and I said no. And I got thrown into prison for it. But God's always been with him. So again, I'm just saying the subtext of the conversation now is so much more interesting because once again, the one constant in the whole story is that the brothers always, always underestimate Yosef. Because they don't believe God is with him. They don't believe that he is with God. They don't believe any of that. So now, continuing with our setup, suddenly a shift takes place. First of all, why are you, now again, I'll say in the subtext, so un-Yosef-like, why are you people who are willing to do bad for people, someone who's done good for you, which of course is a setup and an unfair, Pasukei, Halo ze asher yishte adoni bo v'hu nachesh yinachesh bo. Now this is so strange. The cup which my master uses, and that he uses to divine, he uses to do miracles, he uses for deeper understanding. Right? Hara'otem asher asitem? Meaning, how did he do this? Now, Yosef just now shifted. It used to be Yirei Elokim, and now he's talking about divinity, and he's or divining, not divinity. He's talking about magic and so on. Vasigim, this is all what Yosef said to say. Catches up with the Berelot of Me'ela. And by the way, this throws them for a loop. Now, in a previous shiur, I pointed out that what Yosef is doing in this is he's replaying the scene where the brothers and Yaakov leave the house of Lavan, and when they get, and then Lavan tracks them down, Lavan goes through all their bags, Rachel stole the trafim, which means this whole thing is a setup to relive that experience. My best proof of that is what happens in the next verse. Well, not the next verse exactly. First of all, they say something crazy, which just shows their confusion. But Yomor love lami daber the nikud rama eila chalilav dech masor kudavarzeh. We wouldn't do something like that. Hein kesef asher matzanu piam tochtenu hashivonu elecha me eretz kanan ve'ech nigdov mebeit adunav kesef lozavahav. You know, the first time we found something in our bag, we returned it. So why would you say we would do... Isn't that a silly thing to say? Why are you bringing up the last time you were accused of theft or not accused of theft? But apparently Yosef's so much convinced them, oh, this was a miracle. This was from God. Everything's okay. So they're saying, well, this happened. We returned it. And
did they actually return the money? Did the guy take it?
No, he didn't take it. No, so it's even we try to return it, which again goes to their... truth. And then, and I'm going to say it again, it's silly. Asher yimatzei ito mi avadecha v'meit v'gam anachni el adoni el avadim, which is absolutely bizarre. Whoever is guilty of taking it, he should be put to death, and the rest of them should be slaves. Why are you deciding on the sentence? Now, when Yaakov was accused by Lavan, he uses those exact words. Which means when you're under pressure, you sort of fall into roles, and that's the role that they fell into right now. So that's why they say the same thing. And they also, they're grandstanding a little bit, saying, you know, look, you know, we're innocent, we couldn't have done this, and, you know, put him to death. But it's a really silly thing to say. What's the response? But Yomer gamatem kidivrechem kenhu. Okay, exactly as you said. So what should that be? Whoever has it, put to death, the rest would be slaves. Asher yimatzei ito yeli eved v'atem tiyu nekiyim. Whoever has it will be a slave, and there's, as you said, but he doesn't say as he said, which is he's going back to a God-fearing perspective. The person who's guilty should be punished. The person who's not guilty, go free. Which means, again, he doesn't use the words here, it's Hashem, right, and, that I fear God, but this is very parallel to what Yosef had said the first time. But what's missing, and I want you to hear it very clearly, what's missing now? God. Yosef has not told them to say God. What are they expecting? Because again, when we get involved in conversations, we have certain expectations, what we say, what the other side says. They're expecting the same kind of speech. They would like them to say, oh, God did a miracle for you. Oh, you know, we're going to judge you fairly, and, you know, I fear God. And suddenly that's missing. Suddenly, instead of fearing God, this whole thing about using this, the nichush, takes its place. Let's just continue. Pasuk Yud Bet v'yechapes begadol hachel v'katon kila. They start. They go from the oldest to the youngest. V'yimatzei agviya ba'amtachet binyamin, which now, according to the midrash, sets up for them a perfect reason to leave. His mother stole the trafim. He stole this cup, like mother, like child, and therefore this whole side of the family is worthless. right? Rachel was worthless, Yosef is worthless, Binyamin is worthless, and they can go back to their father and say, what do you want? We did what we could, but he's just like his mother, and he stole something. That's what Yosef is giving them the excuse to leave if they want to. But now again, listen to the words. Pasuk tedva, vayomer lehem Yosef. Mama says, asher sitim, halo yadatim ki nachesh nachesh ish asher kimoni? He says the opposite of what he's supposed to say. What's he supposed to say as far as they're concerned? I fear God. What's he supposed to say? God did this for you. You're God of your father. Which means it's missing. Yosef says the exact opposite. And again, what he really does here, and that's why it's even closer to the Trafim than sometimes we think, there's different reasons that why he would have taken the Trafim and different reasons, or she took the Trafim, and different reasons why they would have taken the cup, which I know they didn't take. The Malbim says, Ki nachesh nachesh ish kimoni, v'yiritim shenachesh begaviyah, you thought I can only know the future using the cup? I can only know where you are using the cup. And the Malbim says that the reason that they would have taken it, again, but it's not true, is because that way he wouldn't know where they are. You can also look at the Meshech Chachma draws the connection with the Trafim. The Rashbam, in Source 22, says, why did Rachel steal the Trafim? That Tignav Rachel Trafim, Shelo Yagidu V'yadiyu L'Lavan Kiratza Yaakov L'Vroach. So that the Trafim don't tell where they are, which means the Rashbam believes that Lavan believed, and maybe even Rachel believed, which is harder for us to believe, that the Trafim actually work. But now you realize the interpretation of the Rashbam is the same interpretation as Yosef, within, which means he's giving the cup in the place of the Trafim. The purpose of the cup is Nichush, to say what will happen. The purpose of the Trafim was to say what would happen. So now Yosef is doing the opposite of what they expect. And how does now Yehuda respond in Pasuk Tet Zayin? Vayomer Yehuda, Manomar Ladoni, Manidaber, Manitzadak, right? What can we say, right? How can we justify ourselves? Ha'elokim matza et avon avadecha, hinenu avadim ladoni. Gam anachnu, gam ashim tzag v'yibido. And now for the first time, he speaks about God. But who? That's what I'm saying. Who got him to speak about God? Yosef got him to speak about God. He's being a ventriloquist. He got Yehuda to say the words that Yehuda was expecting Yosef to say, because Yosef had said it last time. But now suddenly he's standing there, hold it, what about fearing God? What about God? And now Yehuda has to say it. God has found our sin. God is punishing us. And there's no question what Yehuda's talking about. He's not talking about the cup. All of us should be slaves. He's not talking about the cup. He's talking about the sale of Yosef, because that's exactly where Yosef has been leading him. So again, I asked in the very beginning, why was it after they said, but we're guilty. You know, God is, not God, we're guilty, and that's why all this is happening to us. What was missing the first time? Well, two things was missing. One thing which was missing was talking about God. God is not in this thing at all. It's all karma. Now God is finally introduced. Who got them to say God? So that's Yosef. Because Yosef is with God and God is with Yosef, and that's what Yosef is trying to get them towards. What's still missing now? Not a word about their father yet. They did something to their father. So till their father becomes a part of the healing, Yosef has to continue on. So I don't want to ruin this for you and tell you what's going to happen next week, but we're almost there. We're not quite there, but I'm just trying to show you that even the words that Yehuda is saying, it's not a manipulation. It's only manipulation when it's bad for you. It's the education of the brothers by Yosef.